Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Podcast. We'll have Trevor Moad on later. He is Russell Wilson's mental coach and has worked with high-profile coaches like Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. Really interesting conversation about how athletes train their minds for optimal performance. But first, last week, my Blazing Five stunk. I've struggled all year. I'm waiting for the defenses to catch up. I'm 10-14-1 on the year. I stink. Let's turn it around, baby. I'll get to R.J. Bell in a second, but first, my Blazing Five.
That's a hot one.
Let's blaze it up.
Fire it up.
It's Collins' Blazing Five. Browns at Steelers.
It's been an offensive league so far. I'm going to take Pittsburgh -4 here. Baker Mayfield is not 100%. That leads me to believe they'll keep him out of the crosshairs, have a pretty conservative game plan for Kevin Stefanski, who's had more success this year when they've been conservative, run it over, pass it. Big Ben has owned the Browns forever. But what I like this year, Big Ben, highest completion percentage and passer rating of his career. The mistakes are way down. The Steelers lead the NFL with 20 sacks and 70 pressures, and their rush defense is great and will force Baker to play fast. As Greg Cosell told us, he doesn't play well fast. I like the Pittsburgh Steelers to cover, win by a touchdown, 28-21.
Broncos at Patriots.
Like New England, I love New England -9.5. Don't fight it. Young quarterbacks get annihilated by Belichick. All of them. Patrick Mahomes still struggles with Belichick. Drew Locke for Denver is not 100%. He is going to struggle. By the way, everybody always thinks New England never plays well at Denver. Denver's awful at Foxborough. Patriots average 39 a game, 5-0, with a massive turnover differential. And this Broncos offense is prone to mistakes. The Patriots, extra time. This is a big game now because Buffalo is a real football team, and you want to win this division. I love New England in a blowout this weekend, 32-16.
Ravens at Eagles.
I'll take another favorite, Baltimore -7.5. Baltimore is not as dynamic offensively as last year, but their defense has been great at creating turnovers. They're second in the NFL creating turnovers. They're also top five in sacks. What does that mean? Well, Lane Johnson missed practice this week for the Eagles. They continue to struggle with health with wide receivers and O-line. And the Ravens have won 13 games by 14 or more start of last season. Don't sell all your stock. The Eagles are feisty but remain turnover-plagued on offense. And John Harbaugh's never shy to pile it on. He wants this offense to get their confidence back. If he leads, Harbaugh will pile it on. Baltimore wins by 10, 33-23.
Packers at Bucks.
I know a lot of wise guys like the Buccaneers. I'll take Green Bay to win this game -1. First of all, the Packers do one thing really well. Well, multiple things, but you can't get to Aaron Rodgers, and they get to your quarterback. So Aaron will be the more comfortable quarterback this weekend. Passing yards, passer rating, yards per attempt. The Packers are the most explosive offense, yards per play in the league. And Devontae Adams is back. He wanted to play 2 weeks ago, and the coaches wouldn't let him. I still think this is an offense in Tampa that is growing. Chris Godwin and Mike Evans still not 100%. I like the Packers in this huge game on Fox to win 27-24. It's lower scoring than people think, but I've only got to give up one. I'm taking it.
Rams at 49ers.
What do I always say? Bet a well-coached team that was humiliated the week before. I'm going to take the Niners +3.5. This division's the best in football. This is a must-win. This is the season for the Niners. It is a must-win for the Niners. This is a loaded division. If they don't win this weekend, they're an uphill battle for a wild card spot. And by the way, their defense is still playing good football despite what you saw last week. Top five in total yards allowed, passing touchdowns allowed. Garoppolo has faced this defense before with Sean McVay. He's 3-0. Garoppolo participated fully in practice this week. Raheem Mostert, 100-plus scrimmage yards last 3 weeks. They still run the football well. They're still well coached. They still play really good defense. They don't have quite the pass rush. The Rams are a good football team, but the urgency here is the Niners. It's the game of the season. They have to win, and I'm going to take an upset. I call one every week. San Francisco 26-24 over the Rams. People in L.A. must think I just hate the local teams. I didn't like the Lakers this year. I keep betting against the Rams, but 3.5, the hook is too much for me. All of our odds are provided by FoxBet, and go to their social platforms at FoxBet to see some additional opportunities for you. All right, let's go to RJ Bell at pregame.com, Fox Sports Radio. Few minutes, he's gonna talk about what the sharps think of my picks, and for God's sakes, agreement or not, I've been awful. Okay, let's start with this one. It's a big number, but New England is well rested. They're -9.5 against Denver. The Broncos are averaging 15 points a game over the first 3 weeks of a season. And we know that Vic Fangio is not an overly creative head coach. The Patriots are doing something very well, and especially well when Cam plays, RJ. Best rushing offense in the NFL, 179 a game. Second best, I should note. And Damian Harris is becoming a star. This is one of the blowouts I see for the weekend. I like the Patriots big. What do the wise guys say, RJ Bell?
Agreement. I don't like big favorites, but I like it here. You mentioned earlier, Colin, I think it's a valid point. Football Outsiders typically breaks down offense 4 units, defense 3, special teams 1. This year, it feels like the defense hasn't been that full 3 units of the 8 in total. But I do believe if you look at the holding calls, the first 4 weeks of the year, the holding calls were down huge. They were up almost 50% in week 5. Scoring went down 2. I think we're seeing the NFL saying, okay, we're back. It's post-preseason effectively, the first 4 games. Now it's the same rules as before. I think D becomes more of an issue, and that's a good thing, I think, for your style handicapping. And most professionals do focus at least some attention on defense. and in other ways, this has been a season that we've never seen before. We've never faced COVID. We've never faced, oh, this game was supposed to be last week. Now it's this week. Who would you rather have in these one-of-a-kind situations? Belichick over anyone. That's one reason I like this. Number 2, we don't know how healthy Drew Lock is. We know he's going to play, it seems like. Is he 100%? We know young quarterbacks do not do well against Belichick. And then finally, and this is a great stat, if you go back 16 years with the Patriots, 16 years, how many times have they not had a winning record, which they don't right now, 2-2, week 5 or later? There's only been 8 times in 16 years, 8-0 straight up, and only 2 losses against the spread. When Belichick is off a loss, he's got focus. When he's off a bye, he's got focus. When he doesn't have a winning record, he has focus. They've got all 3 here. Agree, Pats.
All right, I'm taking another favorite with RJ Bell. By the way, his Twitter account, at RJ in Vegas. I'm going to take Baltimore -7.5. Philadelphia, once again, receivers are practicing, may not play. Lane Johnson, best offensive lineman, held out. The Ravens are not as dynamic as last year. They're not. But they're the best rushing average in the NFL at almost 5.6 yards a rush. And they've won 13 games by 14 or more since the start of last season. They're not as dynamic as last year. And the Chiefs' loss threw some people off. But they are right now a healthier and much better football team than Philadelphia. I'd swallow the 7.5, win by 10. Ravens, what do the wise guys think?
Again, agreement. If there's any team I'd want to lay the points with in the NFL, generally, it's Baltimore. Why? Because Harbaugh is a bully. He likes to run it up. And let's be candid. Most NFL teams do not have desire for margin. But let's look at Baltimore coming into, let's say, the Monday night game against Kansas City, which was obviously a shocking game.
Right.
Before that, the last 12 regular season games, Baltimore outdid the spread. So its margin against the spread was over 15 points a game. During that same time period, the next best team was less than 5 points. So the Ravens had 3 times the margin of any other team in the regular season last 12 before Monday night. Now, what's happened since then? Well, they had an ATS push against Washington, and they won by 11 extra points ATS margin against the Bengals. So they're back to beating up on lesser teams. Well, the Eagles are a lesser team at this point. You look at Lamar, you're right. He is not as dynamic. His passing's not as good. He's not running as much. But the defense of Baltimore is even better. So net-net, I'm not sure. It might be a small downgrade from last year, but not all that much. Now, here's the one final devil's advocate point for Philly. You could say, well, wait a minute. Philly just went to San Fran as a touchdown plus underdog and won. Then they went to Pittsburgh and could have won as a touchdown plus underdog. They're getting hot. Yeah, maybe. I don't think so. Carson Wentz, in general, this has been his worst year. Agreement on the bullies, the Ravens.
I'll take another favorite, Steelers -4, hosting the Browns. Greg Cosell came on my show this week, and he actually said, I initially thought Cleveland on Sunday and Monday. But he said, actually, Baker's not playing well. Pro Football Focus has Baker Mayfield as the second lowest graded Cleveland Brown on offense. And the Steelers lead the NFL in sacks with 20 and pressures with 70. What does that mean? They're going to force Baker Mayfield to play fast, which, as Greg Cosell said this week, he's already doing. Now, I do think this is going to be fairly low scoring, which worries me giving more than a field goal. But I'll take the Steelers -4 to win by a touchdown. I do think the Browns' pass defense, highly susceptible on the back end. I take the Steelers -4. What do the wise guys think?
Quick question, though. When he said that about Baker being the second worst, if you were hooked up to, like, a lie detector, would you would it start going, like, up and down real quick?
It was great joy.
That's what I'm saying. It would have been like your emotions would have overread. Hey, listen, I agree with this pick, and I agree with the handicap. You're right on. Let's talk about Baker's limitations. One, he's got a hurt rib. Right. So whatever Baker's been, there's a real chance he isn't 100% physically in this game. Number two, as you mentioned, I think quite astutely way back, he's not the prototypical height, speed, athleticism. Well, he struggled when there's been pressure up the middle. They've been running the ball a ton. Pittsburgh has a great running defense. At some point, Baker's going to have to throw, not be a game manager. I think a hobbled Baker, that's a real limitation. Here's the thing about Pittsburgh. You can say whatever you want about strength of schedule. I think it's a legitimate concern. But the last time the Steelers were 4-0 was the 70s. Tomlin, and you've been right about him as a Steelers fan, I would say, is in certain spots he's awesome, other times not as buttoned up. Maybe last year taught him something. He's still a young guy, Tomlin. Maybe it taught him something because he had an amazing year with Duck Hodges and various other quarterbacks. And maybe now he realizes, you know, Big Ben, this is it for us. Year or two with him. Let's do this thing. They haven't had the flat spots like they typically do. I don't think Pittsburgh is a fugazi or a fake. I think this is one of the five best teams in football. You're just laying a little more than a field goal. Agreement, Pittsburgh.
Packers-Bucks started, the lines changed. It's only Green Bay -1, so that feels like a pick'em to me. Here's why I'm going to take Green Bay -1. And I know there's a lot of disagreement going back and forth because I've been on the internet this week. The Packers do three things really well. Offensively, they lead the NFL in yards per play, 6.8 yards. Their third down conversion rate, they keep the ball away from quarterbacks, is top five. And their sack differential rate is top three, meaning you don't get to Aaron, they get to yours. Meanwhile, Tampa isn't doing anything except red zone offense well. They're undisciplined, their protection's been average, they're running the ball okay, and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are both partially hobbled again this week. I think it's a close game. I'm going to take Green Bay by a field goal. What do the wise guys think?
Slight agreement here. This is two-way action, and it's not just sharp square. It's sharp versus sharp. So let's quickly make the Tampa Bay point. Okay, they need this game more. They got embarrassed on national TV, embarrassed at least by losing the game, though Tampa didn't play all that bad against Chicago. They've had 10 days to focus and stew. I hear you. What I also know is this. We'll keep our running standings of quarterbacks 43 or older, their wins. Vinny Testaverde, 2. Tom Brady, 2. Tom Brady will become the most winning 43 or older quarterback in the history of the NFL if he wins this game, and it's just going to be three games. He's in uncharted territory. Also, what do we know about Brady? It takes him a while to integrate new pieces. A lot of Patriots insiders say, you know, Brady didn't throw to some open receivers last year when he kept complaining about playmakers because he didn't trust them. Well, you might have a good pedigree, but as these wide receivers, it's been in and out. I think in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, them being healthy is going to be a wonderful thing. Is it perhaps an integration issue initially? Okay, Green Bay, let's be candid. The most impressive team, if all you did was look at the scores, most impressive team in the NFL so far.
You know what I think they are, too? I don't know if they're the most dynamic, but RJ, what I think they are, RJ Bell, pregame.com, Fox Sports Radio, joining us. They are they're the cleanest team. They don't have something like Seattle and Tennessee are good. They don't have a pass rush. Baltimore is good. Doesn't play well from behind. Pittsburgh yards per play very poor. The Packers do everything pretty well. They don't have a liability to this point.
Least weakness, the best weakness, maybe you could say. I agree with you. I think that what's happening here, Colin, is Green Bay last year was way overrated. The whole year, they might have been a 9 or even, if you're optimistic, a 10-win team statistically, but they won 13. And everyone, like my guy Fezzik, he's always thinking, oh, last year they were fake. They weren't as good as their record. This year, their stats are really good. Last thing I'll say is, and you've been talking some advanced metrics. It's a wonderful thing, these advanced metrics, because in the NFL, sample size is low, so you got to start looking at per play. Well, there hasn't been a single turnover-worthy play from Aaron Rodgers this year, meaning he has no turnovers, and he should have no turnovers. That's amazing. Agreement, Packers.
I got my biggest dog of the week I love. Plus, we'll talk Monday Night Football, Chiefs-Bills, next with RJ Bell at pregame.com. All right, RJ, I've been doing favorites all week. I'm going to take the Niners Sunday Night Football plus 3.5, and here's why. That there's a sense right now that the 49ers are just unraveling. But their defense this year, top 5 in yards allowed, top 5 in passing yards allowed, and top 3 in passing touchdowns allowed. They're still hard to throw on and can still get a rush. And Garoppolo's never lost to the Rams. He's 3-0. He was a full participant in practice this week. And by the way, their running game, and this is Kyle Shanahan's strength, Raheem Mostert, 100-plus scrimmage yards in all three games. It's the biggest game of the year for the Niners because this division is so good. You lose this game, and you really have an uphill battle to be a wild card team. And I like San Francisco, embarrassed on TV last week, to really button it up, play well, and upset the Rams here. I'll take the 3.5. What would the wise guys say?
Biggest agreement of the week. Let's talk motivation. I don't think uphill climb's the right word. I mean, right now, projections I see, San Fran has a 24% chance to make the playoffs. If they lose this game, where does that go? Right? Number two, the integration issue. We talked about Tom Brady integrating new players, at least for him. Well, San Fran's had a lot of starters that's had to step up. What tends to happen is those guys get experience, even though they were second stringers, and they get better and better as the season passes, if it's like a long-term replacement. Also, and I'll give you credit, I was a little skeptical on this 2 years ago. You were always on the idea that Kyle Shanahan was actually a better potential great coach than McVay. Not saying you took anything away from McVay, but you were a Kyle guy. Well, historically, when they faced each other, Kyle's done well as coordinators also. So two of the best talents, young talents, I think Kyle has McVay's number, at least history says so. Last thing, and this is how you know you have value. You could have bet this game a week ago. So these early week ahead lines are great because it isolates. The one thing that changes between that time and now is one game. Each team has played one game. Well, we know the 49ers looked horrible. Okay, one game. The line a week ago was San Francisco favored by 3.
Wow.
Now they're 3.5-point underdogs. There is not a 6.5-point adjustment.
Wow.
Yep.
There's your, okay. So our bonus pick this week, and I think this game's really hard to handicap. So what happens when you loved a defense last year, Buffalo, and you love a coaching staff, and your only question is the quarterback, Josh Allen, and the quarterback gets really good. But yet Buffalo's defense has fallen into the abyss. They're 19th in yards allowed per play. They're 30th in third down percentage. The coach is still there. 95% of the players are still there. Is it just no preseason? Now, Kansas City's off a loss. So my inclination is Andy Reid off a loss will button things up. But it was really hard. This is why I didn't put it in my Blazing Five. I love this staff. They have the same defensive personnel as last year, but they're simply not playing well. Doesn't it have to click after a really poor performance on Tuesday Night Football? I think deep down I kind of lead Buffalo, but I watch their defense, and I don't know how to handicap this game. Explain it to me.
Yeah, this is a great challenge, I think. And here's the thing I can say unequivocally, Colin, is the Buffalo Bills faced the sneakiest, horrible spot ever on Tuesday night. And I'll be candid, I missed it before the game. I missed it. And this is what it was. When has there ever been an NFL team that 36 hours before a game, potentially, they didn't know who they were going to play in the next couple days, right? Because it wasn't announced till past morning on Monday that for sure they were going to play the game Tuesday. So who were the Bills preparing for Sunday? Because they could have played Tennessee on Tuesday, which they ended up doing, or this game would have been on Thursday if Tennessee didn't play or if Tennessee game had gotten canceled against the Bills. So the Bills were literally sitting there on Sunday saying, we might play Tuesday, we might play Thursday, and oh, by the way, they might be different, or they would be different teams. Have you ever seen that?
No.
No one. I asked former NFL players. No one's ever seen it. So to some degree, I think you kind of got to give the Bills a break off of that horrible Tuesday performance. All that said, I look at this situation for the Bills and think it's also unattractive because now they're on short rest. It's a Tuesday to Monday. We've never seen this before. The one thing that keeps me off of Kansas City, though, and let me ask you, other than the Baltimore game, what was the Chiefs' best performance this year? So Houston, Chargers, Patriots, Raiders.
Yeah, they've struggled. This is why I struggle to handicap it. Bill Parcells says you are what your record is, but that can sometimes be misleading because you can't have easier schedules. Green Bay was 13-3 last year, but couldn't beat physical teams. Kansas City keeps falling behind by double digits. I don't think you can do that against well-coached teams like Buffalo. I just don't.
Remember, there was a time mid-year last year on this pod that you had Kansas City out of your Blazing Five.
Yes.
Out of your herd hierarchy. Herd,
yeah.
And what I said at the time was, hey, we think that, and we said Mahomes was hurt, the D is getting better, but let's not forget it wasn't that long ago that they weren't in your top 10 just because they won that Super Bowl. Imagine if they had lost to Tennessee in the championship game and then they started this year this way. We'd be like not even thinking about them. So all I'm saying is I think the case could be made, all the Mahomes love, and I don't want to blame you to give Nick Wright a platform for that. I'm not blaming you, but all of that Mahomes love from guys like Nick Wright, maybe we got a little ahead of ourselves there. So to me, there's two ways to look at it.
All right, RJ Bell, pregame.com. He's on Fox Sports Radio Monday through Friday for his insight, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks, RJ.
Thank you.
We like to bring on different guests on Saturday, people we don't normally have on the show for thoughtful conversations. And this week, it's Trevor Moad. Moad Consulting Group. What do they do? Mental conditioning. He works with Russell Wilson. He's worked with Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, Georgia, Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M, Sports Illustrated, a couple years ago called Trevor the sports world's best brain trainer. Came out with a book last February called It Takes What It Takes, How to Think Neutrally and Gain Control of Your Life. So, you know, Russell's very interesting, Trevor, in terms of a student for you, right? Like, great religious conviction, very high IQ, very driven, So some of those things he brought to the table. Does it make it harder or easier when you get somebody? Because, you know, the smarter people are, they may have more questions. They may have more doubt. Is Russell's basic genetic makeup, his brains, his religious conviction, did it make him an easier young person to work with or more challenging?
Well, Colin, it's great to join you this Saturday morning and excited. I think that probably the unique thing is I've had a chance to spend so much time. You know, I started at IMG Academy, sort of the Hogwarts for athletes in just south of Tampa, Florida, working there in 2000. And so you're surrounded by such an exceptional group of people. So for years, you know, it's the Patrick Rafters, it's the Tommy Haas, it's the Eli Mannings, Alex Smiths, and the Nick Bollettieri's from the coaching perspective, the Mark McCormick, you know, the founder of IMG.
Yeah.
So you're in a population of people that are great, that are always sort of striving to be greater. Crazy enough, it's sort of counterintuitive, but that's the best population to work with. If you know as a teacher, as an educator, and you know, coming from a family of educators, if you're good at your craft and you have a basic understanding of what you're teaching, that's the best population because they're under the most pressure, A, from the outside world to sustain that excellence, and then B, internally to get better, where average people and more recreational mentalities are people that don't think like a Russell, that are so well-rounded and so balanced. Russell automatically put that pressure on and was looking for, you know, what the military calls the aggregate of marginal gains. You know, like how do I aggregate, how do I get a little bit better at sleeping? How do I get a little bit better at my speed? How do I get a little bit better at my studying? How do I get a little bit better at my mindset? So that made it, did he come with all the tools? Of course. I mean, almost every athlete that I've had a chance to work with or coach, like Coach Saban or Coach Fisher or Coach Smart, they're already exceptional. So you're just, it's you bring value in an area where they're looking for, something more refined relative to the expertise.
Nick Saban, though, generationally is different. Nick is older. Nick has patterns. Is it more difficult to work with, say, a Nick Saban who's in his 60s than a Russell Wilson who you may meet in his late 20s?
You know, I think what's unique about Russell, I mean, for myself in my mid-40s, Russell now in his early 30s, uniquely, we just also built a great friendship. Where Coach Saban, I would say, my 8 seasons working with him, 2006, I was with him with the Dolphins for about 40 days that season consulting. And then, you know, Alabama for really 2007 till our Clemson national championship in 2015. Then I went with Kirby Smart to Georgia. It's different. I think with someone like Coach Saban, you have a role. You've got to understand that role. And then when you're called on, I lived in probably 2% of his world calling. But I remember, like, if he would call, and my wife and I were driving in Florida down the road, it would just be kind of, please hold for Nick Saban. And I'd pull over and I'd have a window of time where I would talk to him. And then once I couldn't bring value, then the conversation would end. And, that was, so I had a specific role to execute for him. But what I'll tell you is Coach Saban is probably, you know, like Russell, an incredible person. I mean, when my dad passed away, you know, Coach Saban was the second person to call me right in the middle of practice. I spent 30 minutes, and 2 days earlier, he'd turned down, you know, going to lunch with President Bush and heard all sorts of, you know, crap about that. And those are some things people don't know about him. But it's certainly different, you know, 68 versus 31. There are generational differences, but the information is what it is. It's agnostic. And then how do you make it relate to Miami Dolphins or Alabama football, and how can you support, you know, their mission?
You know, it's interesting. One of the things Russell often says, and Trevor Moat is our guest, the sports world's best brain trainer. Russell talks about being neutral. He'll be talked to after a game, and he's very unique. He did it again this past weekend where he didn't play particularly well, and then he was great when he had to be. He just zoned in.
Yep, and, situational football, yep.
Yeah, situational football. Is that part of your training? Are some people just more, they're just more built for that? I mean, again, our childhood, my childhood probably gives me some, you know, some weaknesses. It certainly made me willful and driven, but I've got certain insecurities perhaps. Are there certain things with Russell that his ability to focus in and stay neutral? Let's talk a little bit about that. Is much of it is obviously teaching, but does some of it feel like a natural gift?
Well, I think first of all, you know, now I think since the book, and I mean, for years, Kirby and Russ and others have been talking about staying neutral, and it just flies over everybody, right? Because the way we think of thinking in general is you're either negative or positive. And for myself as an educator who, you know, was one of a handful of people that was asked to do this at Alabama, Florida State, Georgia, you know, there are no Tony Robbins in sports. There is no self-help industry in the sports world. You either perform at the level or you don't. Yeah, there's some coaches that provide some resources and you know, will give you some things, but at the end of the day, you know, you got to sustain the standard or you don't. And so very few players are looking for help or know what help is. And from a coaching perspective, you know, if you didn't grow up with that type of educational platform in your coaching tree, like let's say you're mentored under Tom Osborne and he didn't have, you know, somebody that could educate in this way, then you're never going to do it. I mean, sports psychology, mental conditioning will never grow in sports. You know, so it's a real niche sort of industry. And as somebody that taught it for many years, you know, I would travel from IMG Academy, where I was the director of performance, every Thursday through Sunday. You can't BS the athletic population, particularly the very best of the best or the coaches. You have to speak the truth. And positive thinking has really, in a lot of ways, been the reason that the self-help industry hasn't grown. It puts too much pressure on people to pretend something bad didn't happen and quickly change psychological state to something that doesn't feel organic to you at the time. You just threw an interception. You've thrown four interceptions. You just went through a divorce. You just got cut. You just got furloughed. And getting there didn't make sense. But the data around negative thinking is very clear. From the Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic, you know, it's almost 4 to 7 times more powerful than positive thinking. So in my early origin, a multiple of 4 to 7 times. So we're talking about 40 to 70 times. So in my early origins with Coach Saban, with Coach Fisher, with Coach Smart, we started to realize that eliminating negativity was much more powerful than trying to increase positivity. And that if you could eliminate negativity, which is carried most powerfully with your language, when you say something out loud, it's 10 times more powerful than when you think it. And if it's negative, it's a multiple of 4 to 7 times. So what we found out, and this was the great thing about working for people, you know, like Nick and Jimbo and with athletes like Russell and places like IMG, you know, hey, give us the most efficient, effective, quickest way to help. You know, we don't have 25 days, or the NCAA only gives you 20 plus hours. So we really put the focus on, all right, how do we minimize negativity? How do we minimize the language? We could get athletes to buy into, you know, not saying stupid things out loud. And then secondly, you know, not consuming social media and the wrong types of things. You know, our verbalization and our consumption of negativity are always in our control for the most part, and that's where they're carried. So we found a middle ground, Colin, which, you know, I just started, you know, going to neutral really in more in about 2015. And when I went with Kirby Smart to Georgia, I said, hey, I just really want to focus on teaching kind of this concept in addition to, you know, obviously the other things, setting goals and you know, how you form a habit and the habit forms you and and all the basic things of, you know, the case studies of, let's study Usain Bolt, let's study Drake. We did all that stuff with our players. Let's study, you know, Mark Zuckerberg. How do great people become great? What happens to certain athletes that should have made it who didn't? And that's kind of what we always built time in for. And then I think, you know, we went to this idea of neutral. A car goes backwards and then it goes forwards, but in the middle it gets to neutral. So the idea of neutral is that the past is real, but it's not predictive. So positive thinking for many people makes them feel like the past isn't real. And it is real, you know, and so ultimately that's where I think the acceptance of, like, Russell, I think that the 2014 NFC Championship is a great example of his thinking of how he got to neutral. Yes, I've thrown four picks. I'm not going to lie and say that we've won, you know, we're going to win this game, but I am going to focus on what we can do next. That's why in that 96-yard drive, he knew he threw the interception. He was accountable for it, but it wasn't predictive of the next drive if he did something different. So that's where this idea of neutral thinking, and our athletes have gravitated towards it. It's obviously not real because the world only looks at things through positive and negative. But for years, and we've been teaching neutral thinking, and Russell was born, truthfully, a neutral thinker.
Trevor Moad is joining us, a mental coach to Russell Wilson. He actually is – they recently formed Limitless Minds.
Yes.
To both optimize performance and enrich culture within some of the world's top organizations and elite performers. I want to go back to not verbalizing negative thoughts, because the impact they have. You have a story in regard – like Bill Buckner is a classic example of a really, really good baseball player who had a really, really bad moment.
Yep.
And the effect it had on him – and talk a little bit about, like, not verbalizing negative thoughts and Bill Buckner and the story there.
Yeah, so it was interesting. Jeremy Schapp was doing a piece, you know, a few years ago, and they were going back through that 86 World Series. And an interview popped up that, you know, no one had really seen it until 1995. And it was from a local station in Boston. And Buckner was being interviewed, and obviously 8-time Gold Glove, you know, 6-time
yeah,
All-Star.
Really good player.
And
a
really, really good player. And, you know, he said, obviously the dreams are, you know, you want to win the World Series, but truthfully my nightmare is to let the game-winning run score on a ground ball through my legs. And, you know, now by verbalizing that, he didn't make it happen, but if you look at the statistics, he increased the probability maybe by 40 to 70 times that it would happen. You know, it's a subconscious plant.
Sure.
And literally, if people understand, like, one of the great things about Russell is not the positivity, it's the fact that he never goes negative. And everybody's mind, Colin, has negative thoughts. Like, you can't change that. And meditation tries to work on that. And you know, mindfulness, which is kind of this new brand that's out there, I think, in the business world. But if people could be just less negative in the areas that they control, they would never need to be more positive. And I think that just by not saying that, Buckner, it didn't mean he would be the MVP, but by putting it out there, he increased the probability it would happen. And that's kind of always been our goal at Georgia and these other places. From the psychological side is just, let's do the simple things better. Let's minimize the controllable negativity. We control social media. When we get to the parking lot, we're going to put our phone away. We're not going to engage our phone until, you know, we get to the locker room so we can have just, you know, do these basic
sure.
things. And then we're not going to talk about the heat, but we're not going to tell you that it's not there. You know, we're just not going to verbalize it. We're not going to complain about being at LSU. We know how hard it is, you know, and it's the same thing with Russ from that perspective. And like you mentioned, Limitless Minds, we're teaching, how do you get to neutral, you know, by really being mindful of what you're saying out loud, and then ultimately accepting that when you make mistakes or when you're successful, you own that, but there is no momentum based, you know, outside of what you do next. So just because you threw an interception, Chris Carson runs one way, whatever, you know, or the opening drive versus the New England Patriots, that happened, that's real. Why? What's the truth? Take the judgment out, take the bias. What's the truth? all right, and are there consequences? You know, but when I get the ball next, what am I going to do different? You know, and I just think that it's simple and it's basic, but you know the athletic population, Colin. That's all, you know, they're not looking for complicated, and they've got a minimal amount of time to get in, make their money, and get out.
His book, which came out last year, It Takes What It Takes, How to Think Neutrally and Gain Control of Your Life. Trevor Moad joining us. You know, it's interesting is there's a little low-level anxiety in my family, and I don't sense it a lot. But occasionally, if I have a big trip planned with my family, I can almost make myself sick. Like, I just don't feel good. I stress about it. And I'll just ask you a personal question, personalize it for our audience listening. So it's not that I'm afraid of flying. I'm not, you know, I fly all the time. But I do, I'm going to have kids. I'm going to have stress. They're going to be, you know, I'm not really stressing about the finances of it. But there is something about big trips that stress me out if I'm doing a big family trip. And it can affect me. It can put me in a mood. I can get snippy. And how would I deal with that? How would Trevor Moad help me solve that?
Well, I think the first thing is you got to go like to the fundamentals of thinking. And that's where just language and what you say out loud and all those things, like, you know, as you get ready for a trip, do you find yourself, you know, like a certain group of people that you talk to and you're externalizing, you know, that, man, every time I have a trip, I feel this way. Or anytime we go to Hawaii or Mexico, you know, do you have kind of a collective group of people that maybe you externalize that to? Because that's the first thing that you can just stop. You know, before a trip, I'm not going to have a conversation with my wife or my kids about, you know, about that anxiety or the fact that that's been true, you know, X amount of times up until this particular trip. Like, you know, then I think the second thing is like, what's the truth? How do the trips work out? You know, like let's just, you know, take the judgment out of it, because there is natural anxiety when you're traveling with other people and people you love and you care for. And when you get on a plane and all those things, you know, which you just accept, but take the judgment out. How do the trips usually work out? And you want to just go to the truth. And if you say, you know what, most of the time they work out really well. You know, and then I think the hard part is when you're trying to tell yourself to be different and to be excited. Like, let's just, you know, when you plan a trip, you have anxiety and there's things that you worry about, and that's okay. Like, it's just a matter of, but going to the truth, how do the trips typically work out? And are you making it worse by talking about it? Which will, you know, only increase it. It's the same thing like you see right now. I mean, I literally disabled my cable. You know, 3 minutes of cable news before 9 a.m. increases your probability by 27%. You'll say you have a terrible day, according to the University of Pennsylvania. You know, and cable news, it's not right or wrong. It's not bad. But they understand the statistics of negativity. We're just wired to receive negativity more. And as you talk to yourself, man, what if this goes wrong? What if this goes wrong? Your mind, you know, just catastrophizes.
You know, Trevor Moad joining us. It's interesting. I would imagine at some point a lot of Americans struggle with sleep. I tend to be a 6.5 hours hard. That's it. 6 hours, I'm done. 4 o'clock in the morning staring at the ceiling, but I'm a great napper. I can nap every day, 15, 20 minutes. It refreshes me. I'm great. But for people that struggle with sleep, you know, don't be on your devices an hour before bed. Don't do caffeine after 5 at night. But how much of it is mental? How much is talking yourself in? Can you talk yourself into a good night's sleep?
Well, like you said, there's a whole science right now, you know, sleep hygiene. And there are things that you can do in terms of, you know, a dark room and a shower before you go to bed and make sure the lights, you know, like you want to, I mean, so much of our success is just based on like the clues that other people have followed, you know, that have made them successful. I mean, Russ and I spend so much time studying other successful people. I always put videos and different things together for him from Sports Century and specials on Fox and specials on ESPN PBS and, you know, presidents and different types of things. So, you know, like, what are the characteristics of good sleeping, and am I doing that, number one? And I think, you know, secondly, with the fatigue science and the sleep hygiene, I think the more we talk about not being a good sleeper, like, you're not born a good sleeper, you're not born a winner, you're not born a great radio show host, you're not like it's a collection of things you do, which also means if you want something different, it could be a collection of things that you don't do. So, you know, what I tell people is, so many people think a great athlete is all these things they do. To me, what makes an incredible athlete, particularly someone like Russ, is what he's willing not to do, what he doesn't go to on his phone, what he doesn't eat, how late he doesn't stay up. You know, all these choices, I think so many people's lives could change if they just stopped doing certain things. And the self-help industry has always been, do this, write this, get up, and journal for 30 minutes. I'm not journaling for 30 minutes. Like, I know myself.
Yeah.
You know, and the population I deal with isn't doing that either. You know, now maybe, you know, these other, you know, business psychologists, people's population is doing that, which is why Limitless Minds was formed, I think, to take this, you know, to the B2C, to a bigger Seattle community and a more national community with Russell, his brother Harry, and DJ and myself, and scaling it. And then also getting into education. Chris Herron and I have talked about this for years, like, why, you know, why am I studying this isosceles triangle or this rhombus, you know, when I should be learning these basic fundamentals relative to my mind? But I think, you know, ultimately the point is, do what people who sleep well do. And you know, like, with your, if your TV, like, it was crazy, you know, Colin, because like I said, my dad, you know, grew up in Seattle, and my dad was a coach at Central Kitsap for many years and then Clover Park High School, and then left in the mid-70s with Lou Tice, who was Pete Carroll's mentor at the Pacific Institute. And they got into this. They were all basketball and football coaches, and they started this education of peak performance and, you know, I don't even know what to call it, brain training, life coaching, sports psychology, mental conditioning. You know, because the average employee at an 8.5-hour workday had 4 hours of productivity.
Yeah.
And if the employee was going through emotional issues, it was 1.5 hours of productivity.
Wow.
And that's 17% effectiveness. And companies, even in the 70s and early 80s, like Boeing and McDonnell Douglas and a lot of the big ones, particularly in the Northwest, were, we need help. And so some of these coaches from the sports world put together these, you know, game plans just based on simple fundamentals, you know. And I just think that that's where, like, when it comes to, just a long-winded way of answering, I apologize, but when it comes to sleeping well, you know, it's obviously you can take pills and you can do other things, but so much of it is just getting behind the behavior of people that sleep well. And then if it's a more clinical issue, then obviously you deal with it. And psychologically, that was what I loved about, you know, my experience at Alabama. The psychological architecture was really well layered. You know, you had clinical support, you had motivational speakers, you had more self-esteem based, kind of like more broad spoken, and then you had profiler. You know, you had all these different layers, and, you know, Nick Saban's got six people, and you have to be, you know, really good at what you do, those six people, and there's not one Division I college coach who has one, and he had six in 2008, you know, and it's always kind of been a niche competitive advantage. And Russell is, like you said, you don't need to be sick to get better, you know, and he understands that, but he's somebody, he's the last thing in the world he needs, Colin, is me. He's wired that way. The guy was doing speeches, you know, to his family in a podium at 8 years old. You know, this is a guy who is already exceptional. Obviously, he's had his adversity playing for, you know, Coach Osborne and saying go play DB and, you know, transferring and all that stuff with his height. But he's wired right, and yet he wants to get even better in those areas. And he also understands the concept of margin for error. You know, he's got to do everything right. So he does. You know, and margin for error, when I was working for the Memphis Grizzlies, Vince Carter, I remember, you know, we had a great conversation. He's a big Florida State football fan. And we're just talking about young athletes. And he just said, the problem is they think they can do anything they want and still be good. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, the choices are made for you if you want to play at a certain level or if you want to be 39 and still play. You know, I'm not eating fast food. I'm lifting the day of games. I'm dunking less so I can get back on defense faster. I'm sleeping in a hyperbaric chamber. Those decisions are made for me. They're not right or wrong. If I don't do those, I'm not going to play at 39, which is fine. But if I do those, I got a chance. And that's where I think with Russ and I and the psychology, it's always been, are we doing the like football, the rules are agnostic. Follow them or you don't. And that's what like people always ask me, Pete Carroll, Nick Saban. I think, you know, and you know, they're good friends. Obviously, what Pete does is we got all the resources for you. You want to use them, great. You don't, okay. But when you get to practice, you better perform at this level. Where I think Coach Saban is, we got all the resources, and you're going to use them, you know?
Right.
And we're not going to give you a chance to not maximize your best. And then when the standard's going to be the same. Pete's going to, you know, have all those same resources Coach Saban has, but he's going to allow you the flexibility to opt in or opt out. And either way, you know, are you doing it? And that's where I think the idea of it takes what it takes. I really got from Vince that there are no choices once you've made a decision to be exceptional. And I'll challenge Russ at times, and he'll challenge me at different times, you know, in terms of, you know, are we doing everything that we can to be the very best that you can be? And the fun thing about Russ is, you know, that's kind of in his DNA just to do that. But he's looking for people to be guardrails to help support that vision in his life, because he knows I've been around Nick and Jimbo and at IMG for tons of years and had a chance to watch the Sharapovas, you know, from 11 years old on. You know, we had a time, Colin, where like literally on the campus in Bradenton, Florida, like in within like three dorms and practice fields of each other was, you know, Michael Beasley, Maria Sharapova, Michelle Wee, Paula Kramer, Freddie Adu. And you know, they're all 13, 14, 15 years old. And, you know, you just, and then like an Yvonne Lendl will walk in and just have conversations. Who's going to make it? Who isn't going to make it? You know, and I remember having this conversation with Yvonne Lendl, and he's just like, well, with Paula Kramer, you know, she's gone through this more organically. So she's been allowed to win tournaments and play and lose tournaments. Michelle Wee's got all this, you know, she hasn't had the time to figure out how to win, you know, or lose or learn, you know, in the same way. So she's probably going to struggle more. And Freddie Adu's this, and you, but, you know, having a conversation with Yvonne Lendl, it was just all these simple things. So I think that that's where Russell really understands what are the basic things that I can do that are going to control what I can control. And he's just been so good at that. And your talent takes over in the complicated, you know, whether you're in a radio show or on a trip with your family or, you know, 2 minutes to go, fourth quarter, facing Kirk Cousins in a rainstorm.
Mm-hmm. Trevor Moad's a mental conditioning expert and strategic advisor, mental coach to Russell Wilson. He's got a book, It Takes What It Takes, How to Think Neutrally and Gain Control of Your Life. Yeah, it is interesting, whereas the Tony Robbins is sort of, you know, it's a, and I do think it can be impactful. When I look at a Tony Robbins, it feels that it works for a short time. I'm more about duration. When I first got into this business, there were a lot of people that were popular, but to me, Bob Costas was smart, and that would last longer than a shtick or a style.
Mm-hmm.
Those go out. Smart never goes out. Same with Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson just had good timing. He was funny.
Incredible.
He was bright. So to me, that would never go out of style. So as a young broadcaster, I was never into the kind of hot, popular meteorite in my business. I was, you know, nothing against Harry Carey or, you know, I don't even need to mention certain people in radio who had a shtick.
I know who you're talking, yeah.
Yeah, but yep. To me, it was always about if you're smart, you'll last. If you're thoughtful, you'll last. You know, it's just and nothing against Tony Robbins, because I've watched that, and I dealt with a life coach years ago who got me through a tough time, and I've done therapy mm-hmm. in my life. If I could ask this, what's the difference between going to a therapist, and I've done that a dozen times in my life, and it's got me through tough spots, and Trevor Moad? What's the biggest difference?
Yeah, I would say there's a skill set difference, I think, for sure, you know, relative to, like, the protocol that you're going to be put through and the way you're going to be trained. I would say my skill set is more of an educator, like a teacher who's teaching the concepts more broadly, like a class. And, it, you know, like my dad would call it edutainment. But more of like, this is how we learn. This is how we process information. This is how and the outside opinions of us impact us. They're 1/10 as powerful. Our opinion of ourselves is 10 times more powerful. Like, I would say I'm a lot more of the self-esteem, like the fundamentals of thinking and education, where a therapist has more of an exploratory. They may have a similar foundation to myself, but more of a individualized protocol that they're going to follow. Many can prescribe medicine. I can't. My master's is in education and social sciences. So I think it's more of a clinical. I mean, what does clinical mean? Just more of there could be a problem that's more, trait based or something that you're born with, that they have a unique expertise to help you work through, or in a relationship that they have an expertise and a series of protocols that, all right, if you guys aren't talking anymore, then this is a set of things that you can follow based upon the expertise I have, where I think that, from my perspective, and I don't think one's better or worse, it's just different. That's why I believe ultimately a great program will kind of have layers. The reason the industry, I think, is so, struggles is, nobody can really get jobs in sports on the sports psychology side, or it's really tough to get relevant. What I'm most proud of is not that, I work with Russell Wilson, but that I've had a chance to be relevant in his life. And at different, moments at Alabama, Florida State, or Georgia, I mean, what my part is so much smaller than all the other parts, or with Mel Tucker now at Michigan State. But in specific moments, I have my window where I've got to carry my weight. And, I've been given those opportunities. I'll never forget, I'm with Maria Taylor comes by we're getting ready to play the Rose Bowl, Georgia versus Oklahoma. A couple of years ago in California, and I'm with Jake Fromm in the morning, and we're getting ready to have a conversation, like just what we normally do. It's not clinical. We have a specific thing that we're going to watch on video. Then we're going to talk, and we're going to go through our things, just kind of our normal protocol, no different than I do with Russ on a Thursday. And she sees me, and she's like, "What's wrong with him? And well, what's going on?" And obviously, she's a Georgia alum, and I'm like, "Man, this is what we do every morning before the game." And I actually got Jake on the phone with Jameis Winston. And I just said, "Hey, look, I want you to, if you're open, have this conversation." He's the only other 18-year-old that's played in the Rose Bowl. So whatever your conversation is, let you two talk. And then ultimately, and I showed him the final drive Jameis had to beat Auburn. Mm-hmm. And I'd called Jameis, and Jameis said, "Hey, it's great for sure." Because I had done the same thing. Russell had gotten on the phone with Jameis before we played the national championship. And so, little things like that. And Jameis had a great conversation. And surprisingly enough, Jake had to leave a game-winning drive or a game-tying drive at the end of the Rose Bowl. I think that's just more education. That's more connecting. That's more synergizing. And then it's a lifetime for me of being raised. I'm at a seminar every night at dinner calling growing up with my dad. And it was just an interesting thing. And I think the toughest thing for me is positive thinking. I just never really bought into, even with a dad who was the president of the National Association for Self-Esteem, but I knew negative thinking was wrong. So I think all my life I was searching for this middle ground called neutral. And now our goal is, how do we help more people get to that place? Because in 2020, it's going to be easier to get to neutral than to get to a positive place. That's just the reality with the world we're living in.
Trevor Moad, been a pleasure. Our Saturday podcast. Thanks, everybody, so much for listening. Moad Consulting Group. The book is It Takes What It Takes, How to Think Neutrally and Gain Control of Your Life. Loved it, Trevor. And he is a Washington State high school background, the great Charles Wright Academy.
Where
my friend Dean Braun, who's been dealing with my finances and running my financial life for 30 years since I went to college with him. He is it's called Charles Wright. What's the name of the team?
Yeah. Well, first of all, also let me mention Russell and our company, Limitless Minds, at thinkbig-gofar.com. Check that out. But the Charles Wright Terriers.
Terriers.
People working on a railroad. Colin, listen, man, a pleasure. Huge fan, and I love how you've stood the test of time and been able to stay really relevant. And so just having the opportunity to come on a Saturday and for you to do something that's just a little bit different, truly honored. And also as a Washingtonian.
All right. Thanks, Trevor.
Thank you.